Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. We have a long agenda today, and we'll get into that in just a minute here after we take the roll to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Representative Petersburg.
Present.
Petersburg present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr present. Representative Bernardi. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi present. Representative Elkins.
Present.
Elkins present. Representative Frederick.
Frederick present.
Frederick present. Representative Houseman.
Present.
Houseman present. Representative Heinrich.
Present.
Heinrich present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Murphy.
Murphy present.
Murphy present. Representative Nelson.
Present.
Nelson present. Representative Olson.
Present.
Olson present. Representative Richardson. Representative Torkelson.
Present.
Torkelson present. Representative West. Representative West. Representative West.
Here.
West present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from Thursday, March 12th, 2021. Is there a motion, Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the approval of the March 12th minutes for this committee.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Is there discussion to the motion to approve the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thanks, Representative Petersburg. So, members, as I mentioned at the outset, we have 9 bills today. And, it's not my style here to rush bills through, particularly several that I think are worthy of a lot of discussion, or some discussion, certainly. And so we're going to take, the bills I'm going to consider here at 5 o'clock after we recess at 2:30 will be the House files related to small cities and township funding. Representative Olson has a couple of bills, House File 1147 and 1148, and also House File 1620 from Representative Lippert. And just to give members some context, we are going to work through a few more policy bills this week that need to make deadline, but we're also going to start the process of hearing bills that have some finance implications. We'll lay those finance bills over for possible inclusion so that we can hear as many of those proposals as possible from both sides of the aisle, actually, before we mark up our bill after the Easter possible break. So that's the plan for the rest of the week. And again, we're going to have our target next week and then really start to roll up our sleeves and do the work on the finance piece of this bill. And so we'll have quite a few bills next week as well. So with that, our first item of business today is House File 2172, Representative Wolgamott, a veteran of this committee. Welcome back. I will move that your bill, House File 2172, be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. And there are some data provisions in this bill that they will need to review. And I also understand you have an amendment. But first of all, welcome back to the committee, Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be back in transportation and see some familiar faces. I do miss being on this committee. You know, there's always the next biennium. So good to be back. Thank you very much.
Well, we miss you too, but we know you're doing good work other places. So, Representative Wolgamott, you have an A21 amendment. Would you like to incorporate that now?
Yes, please. It's just getting the bill in the shape that I would like it in.
Okay. Could you do a quick explanation of what the amendment does?
Absolutely.
We can also have House Research do that as well.
Yeah, I'll just defer to House Research. Thank you.
Mr. Burris, to the A21 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A21-0086 amendment is a delete all. It would eliminate an account that is in the underlying bill and a statutory appropriation. Both the underlying bill and the delete all amendment have some data practices as well as incident reporting requirements. And then in the delete all, there's a fine revenue distribution provision that replaces the account and statutory distribution or statutory appropriation, excuse me. And that's found in section 2 of the delete all.
Okay, well, members, this is just a way for Representative Wolgamott to get the bill in the shape you would like us to consider it in. And many of the items that Mr. Burris mentioned, I think, will be under discussion when we take up the bill. So is there any discussion to the A21? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. This is a motion to approve the A21 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. And we have the House File 2172 as amended before us, Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to start my presentation with a brief video.
Okay, let's cue up the video, staff, and we'll take it from there.
School bus stop arms exist to protect children as they are picked up or dropped off at school or home. We'll examine requirements for vehicle drivers regarding school bus stop arm safety, how these requirements are enforced, the consequences for violations, and how you as a motorist can help keep our children safe. In Minnesota, school buses make at least 10,000 trips daily. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, children are 8 times safer riding a bus to school than any other vehicle. Their safety while getting on and off the bus is crucial. And this is why stop arms were implemented decades ago. Yet, violation of laws regarding stop arms continue to occur on a daily basis, endangering our children statewide. Every year, we hear stories of children being hit or nearly hit by vehicles not obeying the stop arm law.
It was my first stop in the afternoon. I had signaled as I turned a corner, activated my 8-ways, opened the door, the stop arm's out, the red lights are on, and the children were departing the bus.
And my son came running in the house and said that Evelyn was hit by a car.
Bus was stopped, stop arm down and everything, and as she's crossing the street, there was an oncoming vehicle. The bus driver honked the horn, yelled Evelyn's name out the window.
The car was not going to stop.
And Evelyn stopped and looked back at the bus driver and then kept going because she didn't understand what was going on.
And she hesitated just enough for the car not to fully hit her. But she did keep going a little bit and the car clipped her.
Knocked her to the ground. The rear tire ran over her foot.
I'm very grateful because if Mickey, the bus driver, did not stop her or slow her down, she would have been right in front of the car.
It's eye-opening having first-hand experience with your kid getting hit by a car by someone failing to stop at a stop arm for a bus.
It was the next day. She didn't want to ride the school bus because she didn't feel safe. So it took a while for her to get back to normal. It was very hard.
It's stories like these that reinforce the point that everyone needs to pay attention to their surroundings and always stop for school buses.
Well, Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for taking a moment to watch that video. You know, as the father of an eighth grader, it's always been one of my greatest joys. I know that many of you have kids and grandkids, nieces and nephews. It's such a joy bringing your child to the school bus, the excitement, spending time with friends. But that feeling can turn to gut-wrenching tragedy because we have too many drivers on our roads who blow right past our school buses. That's unacceptable, Mr. Chair members, and that's why I'm bringing this bill before you today. We've seen too many injuries and fatalities due to other drivers passing a school bus while the emergency lights are flashing and the stop arm is extended. So the goal of this bill is to deter illegal school bus passings by equipping more buses in our state with stop arm cameras. According to a Minnesota Department of Public Safety 2019 one-day survey, 2,376 drivers reported 625 stop arm violations. Over the course of a 70-day school year, those figures add up to more than 106,000 stop arm violations and potential for serious injury or death for Minnesota kids waiting at bus stops. The National Transportation Safety Board recommended the installation of stop arm cameras on school buses and noted they can deter drivers from illegally passing stopped school buses. Current Minnesota penalties for illegally passing a stopped school bus include a $500 misdemeanor to the driver, or if the driver is unknown, a $100 petty misdemeanor to the owner of the vehicle. This bill, Mr. Chair and members, increases the petty misdemeanor penalty to $300 and directs $250 to the school district where the violation occurs for the purchase, installation, and maintenance of stop signal arm camera systems. There's a growing coalition of groups that have coalesced around the idea of equipping school buses with cameras to protect our children, including school groups, safety advocates, and law enforcement. I would love to have them all here to testify today, but in the interest of time, we've included their letters of support in your packets. So that's why I brought this bill forward. That's what this bill does. And with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn over to John Solier, the CEO of Bus Patrol, which is one of the companies that install the cameras on buses, to show you the technology available to assist law enforcement.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamon, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Soulier. Please state your name for the record.
Hi there, I'm Jean Soulier. I'm the CEO and founder of Bus Patrol. Thank you for having me today.
Please proceed with your testimony.
Wonderful. I'm a Canadian tech entrepreneur who spent most of his career worrying about how trucks moved our things more efficiently until I found out that school buses were being passed at the rate they are. And since starting our company and me moving to America, we've become the most deployed safety technology on the planet for school buses. We're on over 15,000 buses already, with a lot more to go. I've also become an advisor to a variety of legislators as they pass a legislation like what's being proposed today, and I've learned some pretty interesting lessons that I want to share with you all. One of the things about school bus safety, which is pretty unique, even though 80% of the illegal passes happen in more urban centers where there's more traffic, the deaths, almost 100% of them happen in more rural roads where the speed is much higher and the survivability of these accidents is next to none. So building a program that actually works requires that every bus be covered. And in order to do that effectively, what we've designed is a program that puts the cost on the vendors to go out there and install 100% of the fleet, removing the financial barriers that have kept the school bus kind of in this archaic technology world. You sit in your car, it's a spaceship, but when you sit in a school bus, it looks not much different from the one we sat in when we were kids. So we're trying to change that. And by making the amendments to the bill as suggested and passing it as is, what you will be doing is ensuring that 100% of your children are protected. But also what you'll be doing is you'll be making sure that the program changes behavior. When 100% of the school buses in any community are covered with this kind of AI technology, every single person that passes gets caught. And what happens then is we start to instill the same reflex that we see when we're driving down the interstate and we see a trooper. What's the first thing we do? We hit our brake and then we look at our speed. It's instinctive. What we're really trying to do here is make sure that we instill that same reflex in drivers. The hesitation in that little girl that saved her life, we're hoping to instill that same reflex in drivers so that their hesitation can save lives. We can change behavior. We can make the journey to and from school a safer place. There's no one in the world that has had more experience in deploying these programs. And I'd love to answer any questions y'all may have. Happy to be here.
Thank you, Mr. Soulier. Are there questions? Okay, Representative Petersburg and Mr. Soulier, we have an interesting system. I learned this. I was at a meeting of various legislators. I'll get to you in a second. This is my introduction to Representative Petersburg. now his curiosity is peaked. I was at a meeting with legislators, and we had some people from the Ontario Provincial Parliament, and the person introduced himself as the minority critic. And so Representative Petersburg has that role on our committee, which I love the Canadian system because we call it the ranking member, but you know, he's a cooperative guy, but in some ways he's also the critic. So our minority critic, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And really this is about, are there other testifiers? Because if there are, this really is for the bill itself.
I think Representative Wolgamott, do you have other testifiers?
No, as I mentioned, Mr. Chair, there are plenty of other people who support this, and I included their letters in the packets, but for the interest of time and out of respect for members of this committee and your busy agenda, I only have one testifier today. So,
okay. So let's do this. Representative Barr, is your question to the testifier to the bill also?
Bill also, Mr. Chair.
Okay, well, why don't we just get going? Thank you, Mr. Soulier. I don't think we have any questions of you. But Representative Petersburg, why don't you proceed?
So there are a couple of different questions. Whenever we get to videotaping people's performance and so forth, we get into the idea of private data versus public data. My understanding from talking with bus companies and so forth, this is kind of a 180-degree video camera that gets turned on when the arms go out to record anything that might happen. How are we handling the data after it is processed? In other words, is that something that's destroyed, eliminated, et cetera? And then the second follow-up question is how did you determine the fee penalty from $300? I'll ask that question a little bit later, but first, just a question on regards to the data and privacy issue.
If I may, I can answer that.
Okay, Representative Petersburg, I think Mr. Soulier will answer that.
Fine.
Mr. Soulier?
Yeah, no problem. So essentially what's happening is we have an artificial intelligence engine that's on the bus, and every time the bus stops, it's plugged into the telemetry of the bus. So when the lights flash, we know to look. That stop arm event, that call it 30-second moment in time, is what's transferred over to the cloud to be processed to determine whether an evidence package can be built from it. Once an evidence package is built, it's shared with a law enforcement technician or officer to approve it. If the ticket is approved, then it's sent to the offender and then follows its course. If it is disapproved, everything is purged from the system in an automated fashion, and the data is used exclusively in support of the enforcement of the traffic laws in the jurisdictions that we serve. Also, everything is built with the latest cloud cybersecurity and meets all the privacy legislation that currently exists in supporting of automated enforcement, as well as the FERPA requirements that schools are under.
Okay.
Mr. Representative Petersburg, you had a second question. I think it's appropriate for you to ask that now.
Yeah, thank you. It revolves around just the fee structure for the fine itself. I'm assuming, I'm not into public safety knowledge as well, but I'm assuming going from $100 to $300 doesn't change any threshold for going from a petty misdemeanor on up to something else. So that's one part of it. The other question is, it seems to me, if I remember right, the $100 that was the fine was going into the department's coffers. Now it's only $50 that's going there, and $250 is going to bus companies and so forth. So the question is, what made you choose $300? And will there ever be a time in which all the buses are covered and so there may be an excess amount into this fund?
Would that be for Representative Wolgama, perhaps, or I don't know if Mr. That's one for Mr. Soulier.
I can do that, Mr. Chair. Yep. So we went with that amount because that's a maximum that's allowed for a petty misdemeanor.
Okay.
And then we're doing that we made that increase just so that we can generate revenue to the schools for installation on this. We are hopeful that this would be as cost neutral to the state as possible. We picked a number that wants to create just an adequate revenue stream. I mean, there's no magic number. If you have a magic number in mind, I'm more than opening it, but that's just what, based on the conversations I've had, consultation with other places that this has happened throughout the state, that just seemed to be the right number that worked to achieve the goals that we're trying to here. Unless Mr. Soulier has anything else to add.
I would just say that the fine is in line with the legislation that's being passed across the country, and essentially keeping these programs well-funded. And again, kind of bring back to my example in my testimony, covering 100% of the buses, there are many buses in rural areas that would never issue enough tickets to get the technology. So the core thought and the underlying principle here is safety and making sure that 100% of the buses get this technology. And that's the priority.
Follow up,
Representative Petersburg?
Yeah, thank you. I think that makes all sense. It's kind of intuitively what I anticipated. However, it does seem like we reduced the fine going to the department from $100 to $50 while also increasing their work in regards to issuing the tickets and so forth. So is there a negative cost reflected in any kind of fiscal note or anything?
Representative Wolgama?
I would defer that to House Research.
Maybe Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, so the fiscal note for this bill came in with the original version of the bill, so before the TE amendment was adopted. Once this bill gets re-engrossed, the new fiscal note request will come out. There will be some changes in terms of the assumed impact of the fee amount. To your question specifically about potential foregone revenues, in both the original version of the bill and the Senate version of the bill that also has the $300 fine, there is some calculation of those. I don't want to say what a potential fiscal note would be. I would need the agency to finish that fiscal note, but it would be impacts in the judiciary budget area that would relate to the general fund, but also touching potential transportation funds like the Trunk Highway Fund.
Thank you.
If I can add, Mr. Chair, the increase.
Mr. Wolgama.
Thank you. We also predict that the increase in the number of tickets will cover the lower amount to the local jurisdictions.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please, Mr. Zlier.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a data point. So in Pennsylvania in 2018, across 16,000 buses, there were 667 tickets issued by the standard manual process of police cars catching people. So when we did our pilot on two buses in Allentown over a month, we found 205 violations. So the odds of a police officer being present when this happens is infinitely small. And automated enforcement is going to increase the number of tickets, therefore increase the education and the revenue streams. So notwithstanding any reduction in distribution, it will represent a significant increase in overall revenue for all the parties involved.
Thank you, Mr. Soulier. Representative Barr, and then Representative Torkelson, and then Representative Heinrich. Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know whether the bill author or Mr. Soulier, either one can answer this, I suppose, or address it. We used to, well, there was a time maybe 20 years ago, the state was issuing, implemented some red light cameras, and those were found to be unconstitutional because the officer wasn't actually line of sight, didn't actually see the violation, and yet you had it on camera. This is catching it on camera, and I'm kind of curious if you're just going to take another stab at getting the court to reverse itself, or is there a different thought process behind this, a different legal angle? I mean, I'm not opposed to the idea of making our kids safe. Please don't misconstrue that, but I do want to try and avoid as many future court challenges as possible before we spend a lot of money in that and have to go tear it all back out again.
Good question, Representative Barr. Would either the author or testifier take a shot at that one?
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to the testifier.
Okay. Mr. Soulier?
Yeah, I would just say that we are, Bus Patrol funds 100% of the capital to these programs wherever we go. So we're writing significant checks to deploy technology, and we are also on the same page. We want to make sure that when these tickets are issued, that we're not at risk of contestation and reversal of fines, and that everything that we're going to be doing up to implementation is going to be to make sure that we draft this with your partnership in a way that can be accepted by the courts for your state laws. So we are very sensitive to that, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Representative Barr, did you have a follow-up?
Mr. Chair, there we go. Sorry. Mr. Chair, I don't really have a follow-up, but it doesn't sound like I actually got an answer to the question from either one. I mean, I understand being sensitive and whatnot, but red light cameras have been deemed unconstitutional in Minnesota by our state court, and I didn't know if there was a different angle they were using, because it's videotaping an action that is later transferred to a law enforcement agent who will then write the ticket, not being present. And that was what the problem was. And it seems to me that this is exactly the same thing as that was. So like I said, I did not hear an answer to that. And Mr. Chair, could you tell me what the path of this bill is? Is it going to go to judiciary after?
Yes. Representative Barr, thank you. I was going to even suggest that would hopefully be something that would be very much scrutinized in the Judiciary Committee. That's where it's going from here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I think constitutional questions are legitimate here, of course, but that is definitely an area that I think will demand exploration, in addition to some of the data concerns that Representative Petersburg had brought up. So, again, important to talk about them in this committee, but they'll certainly be very relevant to the next committee. Okay, I have Representative Torkelson, Representative Cagle, and Representative Elkins. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my first question is for the testifier. That has to do with the connectivity of this data. You mentioned it going to the cloud. Does that require a internet connection from the bus? Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, Mr. Soulier. Mr. Soulier, please.
Yes, it is a cellular connection that's used. We're compliant to a multitude of cellular networks. We don't run on the public internet. We run on private networks that are built for us, as an example with FirstNet. When a bus goes in a rural area of the province and the connectivity is weak, then when it gets to a stronger one, the system is smart enough to know when to queue up these events and send them over to the Amazon Web Services backend that's supporting all of this.
So,
Representative Torkelson, and by the way, Representative Heinrich next.
If I may, Mr. Chair, so that data then is held temporarily on the bus?
That's correct. So the bus, on the bus, there is an encrypted, call it an industrial computer that we equip the bus with. It has a modem connectivity that is, again, using encryption on our private network to gather evidence and then transmit it over the cloud.
Thank you. If I may ask another question, quick question, Mr.
Representative Torkelson, proceed.
But thank you. This would be of the author. Have you had a conversation with law enforcement? I know we've looked at the possibility of traffic cameras in work zones, and law enforcement has some serious reservations because of the fact that they'd be issuing tickets remotely.
Representative Wolgamott.
So the question was just if I've been in conversation with law enforcement?
Correct.
Yes, I have. With law enforcement as well as with DPS. And it's up to law enforcement to make the decision whether enough evidence exists to issue the ticket. This just gives them more data to be able to keep our kids safe, and they will have that discretion whether or not to issue a ticket.
Well, Mr. Chair. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. But they also have to have somebody that sits down and looks at these tapes. And there has not been a willingness to commit to those extra expenses in other areas. And I would hope that you would be discussing this with law enforcement. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Heinrich is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Mr. Solier. I was just wondering if he could give us some ideas of cost for installation and hardware, and then if there's like ongoing subscription fees or setup fees for the cloud software. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Solier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. There are no costs, no upfront costs at all to any partner, whether that be a municipality, a city, a school district. These programs are funded exclusively out of collected ticket revenue, and Bus Patrol invoices a percentage of that collected ticket revenue. So the government is never in any risk of losing any money on the programs whatsoever. And that includes ongoing maintenance, as well as the reimbursement of fees. And there was a question earlier about law enforcement. So law enforcement, to give an example, typically for every 1,000 buses, it would represent no more than two full-time equivalents. So we're talking about a few hours a week in most cases as we deploy this, and all of the hours spent by law enforcement in support of the program are reimbursed and paid for by the program. We've designed this to really remove all the financial moats that exist to encourage participation and really encourage the rapid deployment of the technology.
Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm wondering, Mr. Solier, if you could give us a cost for installing the hardware and the hardware cost into a bus. We're taking maybe one bus. What would that run?
We don't charge anything. We charge it. It's all a percentage of revenue. So we charge a percentage of collected revenue, and we pay for all those costs. There's never any upfront costs. Now, what's the value of the equipment that we put on a bus? It's roughly $5,000 of equipment up front, plus another $1,500 of installation. But the operating of the program requires a lot more than that. And again, Bus Patrol takes on 100% of the cost, whether it be labor, paper, maintenance, equipment, connectivity, data. All of those things are all covered by the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Heinrich. Okay, we have two more questions. Representative Cagle, and then our last one is from Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is kind of similar to my flaggers bill last year. And so from my understanding, bus drivers are already given the ability to cite people who don't obey the stop signs. And so what this would do then is allow them just a little bit of evidence. I think when, the kiddos are getting off the bus, we want to make sure the bus driver is paying attention to the kids and not trying to, grab license plates of every car that comes by. And so, this would give me a little bit of peace of mind. You know, I've got some time before my kiddo goes off to school. But I think that, once I see her getting off on and off the bus, this would give me a little peace of mind. And so I think, it's really already aligned with what we're allowing bus drivers to do. And this just really gives a little bit of support to those bus drivers. So just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have Representative Elkins, and then I'll take one final comment from Representative Kosnick or question. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so that might be a question for Mr. Burris, but my recollection on the red light camera law, it wasn't that the use of red light cameras is unconstitutional. It's just that it's not authorized by state law, which requires that a crime be observed by a person in addition to the camera. And as Representative Cable was just observing, in this case, the camera is recording the same thing that the driver sees anyway. So this wouldn't come into account in any case. So Mr. Burress can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my recollection.
Mr. Burress, on the constitutionality of the legislation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Elkins, the case that comes to mind for me as well was not really discussed in constitutional terms. It was the Coleman case that dealt with the powers of Minneapolis or a local unit of government to do automated enforcement under state statutes. I'm not aware of a separate constitutional discussion of that authority.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's my recollection as well. It's the same as Mr. Burress.
Okay, thank you. And our last question or comment comes from Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick, are you connected here? I see a hand, but no Representative Kosnick. Okay, well, if we can get him connected here before the end of the conversation on this bill, we'll call on him. But is there any further discussion to this House file, 2172? Okay, final comments from our author, and then Representative Kosnick, one last, I see your face now. Are you connected?
Can you hear me? My video's locked up.
We're not gonna do anything on this bill without hearing from you. So do you have a question or a comment?
Just a quick comment, and I apologize, my video was locked up, my mute was locked up,
We've all been there.
I'm in the state office building, so I appreciate the intent of the bill. Keeping our kids safe is obviously paramount. I just need to say that I have concerns, and I'm sure this will get more vetted out in the judiciary, but essentially what I've heard the testifier say is there's a profit incentive on the number of tickets that are written to the supplier of the technology. Sure, the schools will get some of this money, but I have real concerns, and I'm sure people on the judiciary will as well, that the more tickets you write, the more funds and revenue stream will be generated. So that's a big concern for me, aside from the other things. And I guess we're just laying this over, so I won't be voting, but that is a big concern that I think needs to be publicly stated.
Well, Representative Kosnick, I think we're planning to move this bill to, I don't know if that's your intention, Representative Wolgamott, to judiciary at this point. So, and it may stay there. I mean, they may want to take a look at it. I don't know if what the path would be after that.
Mr. Chair, may I just add something to that last comment really quick?
Sure.
Representative Kosnick, just to give you some comfort, Bus Patrol does not approve a single ticket. So the concept is to do a separation of duties where law enforcement's judgment is used and the vendor is used as a financing mechanism and to build quality evidence when these incidents occur. And that's where the separation between the approval of the ticket and the money and the vendor takes place. So we're able to enforce the law. We're able to provide evidence to the right authority so they can enforce the law as they see fit on their territory. Just a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Soulier.
Thank you.
Representative Kosnick, anything else?
No, I think I've made my comments. Thank you.
Okay, good. Representative Wolgamott, final comments before we vote.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and for the safety and security of all the children across Minnesota, to help them get to school safely and soundly, I ask for your support to send this bill to the Judiciary Committee. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, members.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott, and thank you. I think you had a couple bills on school safety in 2019, so we appreciate your ongoing work on this issue, school bus safety. With that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 2172 be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Mr. Chair, Dodge, please take the roll.
Mr. Chair, this is John. Just want to make sure I heard you correctly that it was as amended.
Oh, I'm sorry. House File 2172 as amended. Thank you, Mr. Howe. And on that note, we'll take a roll call. Mr. Dodge. Aye.
Bernstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
No.
Barr, nay. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Kosnick, nay. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Aye. Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye.
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
No.
West, nay. There are 14 ayes and 3 nays.
Thank you very much, Representative Wolgamott and members. This bill is now on its way to Judiciary Finance. Members, we have one more bill from Representative Wolgamott. It's Representative Wolgamott Day here at the Transportation Committee. We do now have a fiscal note for this bill. So, members, we will go over that note. Representative Petersburg, I just wanted to make sure that I want to check with you first here. We can hold this bill pending, you know, more discussion of the fiscal note, or if you're comfortable discussing it here in committee, we can move it to Ways and Means. We just got this hot off the press, the fiscal note. So it had been my intention to hold it till we had a fiscal note, but we do have it now.
And Mr. Chair, if I could add, that the Senate, this bill was heard in the Senate, and the Senate did move it to their Finance Committee.
Okay, well, we just want to make sure again that our process is bipartisan here, and I wanted to again defer and see if Representative Petersburg had any concerns about this bill moving with the fiscal note just being issued.
Mr. Chair, let's hear the bill along with the fiscal note, and then have further discussion afterwards before we.
Okay.
Before we
you know on. What? Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I'm going to move that House File 1204 be laid over at this point for possible inclusion in a finance bill. We do have an amendment, I believe, Representative Wolfman. Do you want to your bill and the amendment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll start with the amendment and then move to the bill as a whole, if that works for you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, proceed.
All right, well, the author's amendment is pretty straightforward. It does three things. On line 1.10, it removes the word motor from the term recreational motor vehicle. On line 1.14, it inserts a $40 contribution to the Minnesota 100 Club Plate Special Account. And then on line 2.11, it moves the effective date to January 1st, 2022 at the request of DPS.
Okay. Is there any discussion to the amendment, the A1? Again, getting this bill in the shape the author would like it to be considered in. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, I will move it. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. We now have House File 1204 as amended before us, Representative Wolgamott. And we will also want, in addition to the information about the 100 Club, also have some information about the fiscal note from Mr. Lee. So proceed, Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This bill would establish a new Minnesota 100 Club specialty license plate option for vehicles in the state of Minnesota. I want to tell you what the Minnesota 100 Club, who they are, what they do, and what we're going to do with the, if this bill gets passed, what they'll do with the revenue generated by the $40 amount that would be deposited into the newly created Minnesota 100 Club account. Created in 1972, the Minnesota 100 Club was initially created because when a first responder dies in line of duty, most people don't know is that their paycheck immediately ends on the very day of their death, leaving surviving family members with immediate struggle to pay for funeral costs, mortgage payments, car payments, groceries. Yes, even funeral costs are the responsibility of the surviving family. And although the family will eventually receive death benefits from the government, that can take up to 90 or 121 days to make that happen. Mr. Chair and members, that's unacceptable. So thankfully, the Minnesota 100 Club over the years has proudly expanded its mission, and they help cover those costs for not only for first responders, families, including firefighters, police officers, EMTs, corrections officers. When a first responder dies or is seriously injured in the line of duty, the Minnesota 100 Club has been there to help surviving families. So with the help from you, Mr. Chair and members, what the Minnesota 100 Club license plate will do is increase its revenues, which will help the club reach its goal of increasing death and serious injury benefits to first responders. And on top of that, the license plates will help increase the awareness and recognition about the club, which will in turn help to increase funding for the club, thus increase the benefits the organization can provide to our heroic first responders and their families who have had to suffer tragedy because of their service. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's a little bit of background information on the bill and what it's all about, but I do have a testifier to give you more information about the Minnesota 100 Club, exactly what they do, what they offer, and why this bill is needed.
And thank you very much, Representative Wolgamott. Again, what we'll do here is take testimony and then have questions of the testifiers and the author. You have Mr. Dan Retka. Is Mr. Retka available?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay, Mr. Retka, welcome to the Transportation Committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure, thank you very much. My name is Dan Retka. I'm Assistant Fire Chief here in the Metro. I'm here to support the path to support for this important bill that was laid before you folks. First and foremost, thank you. And as we continue to demand more and more from our firefighters and first responders, both volunteer and career, the demands that they are facing continue to be more and more hazardous to their health, to their mental health, to their physical health, and whatnot. These men and women continue to put the uniform on day in, day out, despite this, despite knowing that they have a 68% chance of developing life-threatening cancer, despite unforgettable trauma that they have to live with day in, day out, and even the latest, you know, things that are going on, having to wear riot gear, ballistic gear to routine medical calls and whatnot. These plates will help fund almost immediate relief for these first responders when they're injured or, you know, deceased. It'll also bring awareness to our firefighters and first responders. It'll bring recognition to them that they so richly deserve. So, again, in the sake of time here, I will cut my testimony short, but I just want to ask for your support on this bill, and I think it's a great deal that will provide supplemental funding for this committee or for this club. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Retka. I believe we have another testifier, Mr. Arik Mattson. Is Mr. Mattson available, please?
Yes, good afternoon.
Well, welcome to the committee, Mr. Mattson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Eric Mattson. I was a police officer with the city of Waseca. And last year, on January 6th of 2020, I was shot in the head while working.
Hi, I'm Megan Mattson. I'm Eric's wife. Minnesota 100 Club was there for us this past December for Christmas. They drove down and gave our family a nice check to help us celebrate. They've also been there calling us, checking in, seeing if we need any other support. Public safety officials face considerable danger in their day-to-day work, and this license plate is a way to recognize their efforts on behalf of the citizens of Minnesota. So we are just asking that you guys take into consideration and move forward to pass this license plate bill for the Minnesota 100 Club so other families can receive a nice gift and bring a smile to their face when we needed it and when they need it, and just to know that there's someone there to help them in need.
I want to thank both of you for your testimony and service, very much appreciate your presence here. And I think Representative Petersburg wants to make a comment because I know he's from Waseca. Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been involved with working with Eric and Megan and on a different bill in regards to police officers as well. But Eric was really responding to protecting the citizens of Waseca when he was shot. And I don't know if anybody really can give the greatest thanks for supporting and for the actual sacrifice that he put forth. He is struggling through rehabilitation, but doing extremely well. It's actually beyond most people's belief. And so I think that really refers back to not only Megan's support, but the support from places like the 100 Club, as well as community around him. So I just want to say thank you to Eric for his protecting of society and protecting of our communities, and that we wish the best to him. Thank you, Mr. Thank Chair. You.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And again, thank you to both of you. I know you're a team together, Eric and Megan, and we just appreciate your presence here. We don't have any further testifiers. I know that we have Juliana Ortman, who's the executive director of the 100 Club, is available for questions, as is a staff member from the Driver and Vehicle Services, Thomas DeVita. Mr. DeVita, I think, is always here when we have these special plates, so he's available for questions as well. And we also have Mr. Lee, since this fiscal note came in quite late, maybe Mr. Lee, if you could review that for the committee so everyone's up to speed on it.
Certainly, Mr. Chair and committee members, the fiscal note for House File 1204 that just came in during committee time here has a net $1,000 cost to the driver and vehicle services special revenue accounts, particular to vehicle services. And that's a net of two of revenue and expenditures. There's about $1,000 cost for design, that's one time, and then about $1,000 cost for making the plates. DVS recoups the plate cost from fees generated by people purchasing it in the assumptions. DPS is assuming about 100 of these plates would be issued a year. And then for committee members that have the fiscal note that just came in on page 3, it lists the assumptions and details the plate assumptions and the fee revenue assumptions. So it's a net $1,000 cost, and then there's essentially money in, money out for the year in, year out plate issuance.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. And I have a question for Mr. Lee. Is this a fairly typical kind of thing when we do these special plates bills?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that's correct. One other thing that I forgot to mention is that DVS is also assuming that they can absorb the programming costs to the driver and vehicle system in their existing budget.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only just question was, it seems to me that I've seen $20 and $30 going to the organization. This is $40. Is that one of the larger ones we normally see? I think people are willing to do whatever they wish, but it does seem like that's larger than I've seen before. Or am I wrong there? Mr. Lee.
I think that would be for Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, I would have to double check on that. I think the amounts have varied. Mr. Burris might have some more background, but I'd have to get back to the committee on the historic rates for plates.
I was just curious. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any further questions from the committee? Okay, well, I'm not seeing any questions that you also to the fiscal note that again, it came in rather late and we don't have a 24-hour rule necessarily for fiscal notes, but we do, we don't like to pass bills out of committee without them. So, you know, we're technically, I think, okay on this, but I want to make sure if there's any objection from the committee, or concern, not necessarily objection, but anyone on the committee has any concerns about that. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. Were you laying this over or were you sending this out?
Well, I think what we'd like to do is send this to Ways and Means, but again, if members have concerns about the fiscal note, you know, I'm willing to delay action.
I'm okay with it. So
it's not typical. Okay. It's again, just for the public, we normally have a chance to review these fiscal notes. This literally came in during committee time. So we want to make sure that everyone is comfortable with the discussion we've had on the fiscal note and its accuracy. So, you know, Representative Petersburg. Is your hand still up?
I just wanted to comment that this fiscal note doesn't really bring in anything different than we've seen in other bills like this. It's not really a surprise. There aren't anything that I see as red flags in the fiscal note. So I think it's okay at least for us to move ahead with sending it to Ways and Means, in my opinion.
I would concur. So Representative Wolgamott, do you have any additional comments or questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I want to take this moment just to thank, with all my heart, to thank our testifiers today. Eric and Megan, thank you. On behalf of the entire Minnesota House of Representatives, thank you for what you have done, your service to keep Minnesotans safe. We are just heart full of gratitude for you and your service. So thank you and God bless you. And you've really warmed our hearts today and inspired each and every one of us. So thank you for what you've done. Absolutely. And we will take your courage today and we will use that as motivation to pass this bill out of this committee to Ways and Means so that we can continue to have the backs of your colleagues and first responders all throughout the state to support them and their families who sacrifice so much so that we can go about our lives, so we can live in the land of the free and enjoy our time with our loved ones. So with all my heart, thank you. And Mr. Chair and members, I appreciate you for hearing this bill, and I ask for your support to send this to Ways and Means so that we can have the backs of Minnesota's first responders and their families. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. So I see no further discussion, and I'll renew my motion that House File 1204, as amended, be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
No.
Barr, nay. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason? Representative Mason? Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 15 ayes and one nay.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. There being 15 ayes and one nay, the bill is referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Nice to see you again, and look forward to further deliberations on both of your bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Members, we're going to now move to House File 586. We're running a little bit behind, so it would be my intention to hear House File 586 from Representative Murphy, House File 1232 from Representative Petersburg. I'm pretty sure we can get to Representative Hewitt's bill. We'll have to, move quickly to do that. And then the bill that I have, which is the DVS bill, we're not going to get to that for sure. So I just wanted to let folks know that for the DPS policy bill, we'll very likely have to go on this evening. And we're hoping we can get in Representative Hewitt's bill, but otherwise we do have plenty of time at 5 o'clock to get to these. So, but for sure, let's make sure we can get Representative Murphy and Representative Petersburg in before 2:30. So with that, Representative Murphy, this is your first transportation bill as a Transportation Committee member. So welcome to that important event. And would you like to move your bill 586 to the General Register?
I would, Mr. Chair, if that's what you wish it, where you wish it to go.
I think it would be appropriate for that. So we have House File 586 moved to the General Register. Representative Murphy, to your bill.
Thank you very much. Thank you, members of the committee, for this initiation. House File 586 has been around for some time, I'm told. It was delivered to my office, and I thought, what is this about? And then I got a follow-up message from John Dukic at the Department of Transportation, and it is a bill that they have seen a necessity for. But in its former world, it had too much in it. And so we've severely simplified the bill. And it is something that is a statewide need. And House File 586 clarifies the definition of volunteer driver for the nonprofits across the state and county programs across the state that provides individual volunteers to drive their car, their tires, their vehicles, and pick up people that don't have any other way to get somewhere, like to the dentist or the doctor or to the movie or to the groceries. People, all senior citizens or all citizens, do not have automobiles or transportation, public transportation systems across the state. But the volunteer driver is not an Uber. It is not a taxi. It is not a bus driver. It's a neighbor that cares about their neighbors and wants to make sure that seniors, predominantly senior citizens across the state are getting where they have to go when they have to go without creating unintentional consequences to family members or having no, not giving up going to the dentist because they don't have anybody to ask to get there. And so this very simply simplifies the definition of volunteer driver, and it passed out of Commerce Committee 16-0 to go to transportation. And I hope it'll pass out of this committee the same way.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Do we want to have Mr. Dukic testify, or is he just available as a resource?
I think either one. If you want more testimony or from somebody that's an expert, we can call on him. But if you're satisfied and don't have questions.
Well, let's hear briefly from Mr. Dukic just so we can hear some of his expertise around this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Dukic, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, John Dukic with MnDOT Office of Government Affairs. And I'd like to begin by thanking Representative Murphy for authoring this bill and you, Mr. Chair, for taking the time today to hear it. I know you're pressed for time, so I will keep my comments brief. I did want to mention that this bill represents a collaborative effort between MnDOT, the Departments of Commerce and Human Services, as well as the Minnesota Association for Justice and the Minnesota Public Transit Association to address an issue where some volunteer drivers are being perceived and essentially misclassified by some insurance agent as transportation network company drivers or commercial vehicle drivers, which they are not. And this misclassification can lead to an increase in premiums for volunteer drivers, or in some cases, the decision by potential volunteers to forego this experience due to changes in insurance coverage. And, you know, as Representative Murphy mentioned, volunteer drivers use their personal vehicle and receive mileage reimbursements to assist people in their transportation needs, whether it's taking them to the doctor or the grocery store or to run other errands. And so this bill essentially classifies what a volunteer driver is and what a volunteer driver is not. And specifically, the bill defines a volunteer driver in Chapter 65B as an individual who transports persons or goods on behalf of a nonprofit entity or governmental unit in a private passenger vehicle and receives no compensation for services provided other than the reimbursement of actual expenses. It goes on to clarify that a commercial vehicle driver is not a volunteer driver, and it clarifies some insurance statutes around canceling coverage or reducing liability coverage simply because someone's a volunteer driver. And lastly, and maybe most importantly for this committee, the bill updates transportation-related statutes where the term volunteer driver is used to make it clear that it has the meaning provided in Chapter 65B.472. And so we hope that this bill provides some clarity to volunteer drivers across the state and helps ensure they continue to provide the crucial services for those who most need it. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dukic. Are there any questions of the author or the testifier? Hey, seeing none, I think we're ready to vote. Representative Murphy, do you have any final comments?
No, I just think it helps. This helps people in the neighborhood and in the community, that it gives them another resource to use so they don't have to be isolated in their homes.
Thank you for bringing this House file to us, Representative Murphy. And with that, we will take the roll. I'll renew my motion that House file, or I will rule Representative Murphy's motion that House file 586 be referred to the General Register. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Weinstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins? Representative Elkins? Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason? Representative Mason? Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 15 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you, Mr. Dodger. Being 15 ayes and 0 nays, House File 586 is moved to the General Register. Members, we're now going. Thank you very much, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
We're now going to move to Representative Peterson's bill, Petersburg's bill, and this is House File 1232. What I'd like to do, members, is if we could set aside some 15 minutes or so for this House file. And if we're not done, I know that Representative Hewitt has a student who wanted to testify before his bill and wanted to make sure that student was able to testify, get her testimony in. And then if we're unable to debate that bill before 2:30, we'll do that after recess. But I want to make sure, again, that testifier has a chance to testify per our original schedule. So, Representative Petersburg, House File 1232, I think we're going to move that for possible inclusion. And I understand you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have the DE1 amendment for the bill that corrects something. And before we introduce that bill, I just want you to let you know that the bill originated in the Senate, and it looked pretty simple. But I made a mistake, and I didn't have our friend Matt Burris review it, and he caught some changes that needed to be done. It doesn't change the bill any, except that when we talked about increasing the fees for the driver's license part of it, we forgot about the initial brand new fee. This only talked about the renewal. So this is the correction the DE1 bill is, and then what the then there's some language just clarification. So Mr. Burris, I think, is willing to kind of review those changes and the bill.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Thank you, Mr. Burris. Mr. Burris, to the DE1.
Mr. Chair and members, so as Representative Petersburg outlined, the DE1 contains a series of technical changes as well as a update to establish that the fee increase would apply to initial license issuances when somebody first gets a Minnesota license with the motorcycle endorsement, that the fee increase would apply in that case, as well as cases of duplicate and renewal license issuances. So a lot of the language change that is seen or shown in the delete all amendment is technical in nature, to centralize the fee structure, clarify the effective date, modernize a bit of the language, and revise the structure in one of the subdivisions to more clearly establish what each of the fee components are. And I can go into further detail if there are other questions on the changes in the DE.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Are there any questions to the DE1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of incorporating the DE1 amendment, I'll move that, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So we have House File 1232 as amended before us. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so as you might know, We have driver's education in schools and other things for cars, but we don't really do much for education and driving in regards to two-wheeled vehicles called motorcycles. And they're a group, ABATE, which stands for American Bikers for Awareness, Training, and Education, really supports that particular program and develops strategies and curriculum for increasing the safety and training of our motorcycle riders. Now, motorcycle riding has started to decline, but the need for the training is still there. And with the lower numbers, there is a fund that has been set up in which these fees had been going into in order to support that. And that fund is going to no longer be able to cover the expenses of that training. And so they have asked if this bill could be introduced in which it increases the fees to just the people that are driving motorcycles in order to help self-fund the safety and awareness of their program. And so that's this bill in a nutshell. And I do believe, Mr. Chair, that we do have a testifier. My understanding is it changed from what my last notice was, so I'm not even sure who that is at this point.
Okay, yeah, originally we had Mr. Ernst, but if there's someone from ABATE that is available to testify, please, now's the time to introduce yourself for the committee. Welcome to the Transportation Committee, and please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is Frank Ernst with
ABATE. Oh, Mr. Ernst, wonderful, thank you.
Our goal is to provide our goal is to provide more funding to maintain and or improve rider training and motorcycle safety. Minnesota has excellent rider training programs. Unfortunately, funding is threatening some of these programs. We need to be sure the courses remain available, and we need to encourage participation. Many of our serious and fatal injuries in Minnesota result from single vehicle crashes. Many of these crashes happen while negotiating curves or corners. Our rider training programs address these issues, spend a good deal of their time on them, but if we don't get people into the classes, they don't do us any good. We need to do what we can to promote training to all riders at all skill levels, basic, intermediate, advanced, and expert. We need to keep classes at all levels close to home to have a minimum traveling distance. Some of the classes that require more than one day of riding time would, if people had to travel, require an additional overnight lodging cost, and we would like to try and eliminate some of that. From 2020 to 2021, the basic rider course fee increased from $195 to $245. To offset some of the other costs. The proposal we have here would prevent some of these additional increases being necessary. It's a simple $8 fee for the first time somebody gets their endorsement. And after that, for those of us that have a motorcycle endorsement, we would pay $4 additionally once every 4 years. So in other words, $1 a year, a very, very small fee to pay, and the motorcyclists are willing to pay for it. Minnesota motorcyclists have a history of doing our part. We're the ones that advocated for and worked with the legislator years ago to bring about rider training and to create the motorcycle safety program and create funding sources for it. When alcohol-related crashes were a big part of the fatalities in Minnesota, ABATE of Minnesota stepped up and we formed an organization called Motorcycle Dial-A-Ride. It's supported by, manned by, and funded by motorcyclists to keep impaired riders off the road. Now we find it's time that we need to make some additional changes to help our rider training program. What do we want to happen? We want to maintain or improve our rider training program. We want to increase availability of classes, improve communication to make motorcyclists aware of traveling, make motorcyclists aware of and eliminate traveling distance. And we want to do all of this with motorcyclist dollars. This change was suggested by ABATE of Minnesota, is supported by the Motorcyclists of Minnesota, and has been proposed to the Minnesota Motorcycle Safety Advisory Task, who voted in favor of supporting this bill. So, Mr. Chairman and members, we would encourage your support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ernst. Are there any questions of Mr. Ernst or the author at this moment? I don't see any. Representative Petersburg, we're laying House File 1232 as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, but I wanted to see if you had any concluding comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to say that motorcycle safety not only impacts motorcycle riders, but also the public in general, because as they ride safer, we are also easier to negotiate motorcycles and so forth. I used to ride a motorcycle when I was real young, and it was amazing how many people didn't bother giving me the entire lane before they passed me. They would just pass right over the middle of the dividing line. So it's important, and I just thank you for your support, and thank you for the committee to hearing it.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative Petersburg. I know we have a number of motorcycle enthusiasts on the committee, and of course, our former colleague, Representative Mark Uglum. He's, I think, cycled all the way to Alaska and back in recent times here. So it is definitely something that is a very important part of our safety agenda here in this committee. So thank you, Mr. Ernst. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. With that, we are laying over House File 1232 as amended for possible inclusion of the transportation omnibus. Members, as I mentioned before, for those of you who are here for the DPS policy bill, we are going to take that up at 5 p.m., at 5 p.m. after recess. But I do believe we do have time now. We have a hard stop, Representative Hewitt, at 2:30, as you know, with our limitations here. So I want to make sure we have get your testifiers in at least. And so, Representative Hewitt, welcome to the Transportation Committee, and I'm going to move House File 1675 to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I understand you have an amendment as well, if you'd like to incorporate that, and then we'll move very quickly to your testifiers so that they don't have to come back at 5.
Thank you. I'd like to incorporate the amendment.
Okay, and that is an amendment to get the bill in the shape you'd want. Just maybe 30 seconds what the amendment does, the A1.
I have to consult with staff with some technical fixes okay. with this and put it in line. So
Mr. Burris. Okay, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would create a reference to the current fee table that's in place for special plates instead of independently setting a different fee level.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. Is there discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. The motion prevails, and the A1 is before us. And again, the motion before us is for House File 1675 as amended to go to the Ways and Means Committee. Representative Hewitt, do you want to briefly talk about your bill, or should we move right to Ms. Arswald and Lainey Sweers?
Mr. Chair, let's move to the testifiers. If I have to come back tonight, I will.
Okay. Wonderful. And I think our testifiers can give us some perspective on the bill. I think we heard this last biennium. I think Representative Poppy was the author. Ms. Arswald, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you so much. Val Arswald.
Proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you so much, Chairman Horsey and committee members. Thanks for the opportunity. On behalf of current and future FFA and 4-H members in Minnesota, I ask for your support of the House Bill 1675 to initiate a specialized agricultural license plate that would not only celebrate the importance of agriculture in our state, but allow Minnesota citizens to take an active role in providing support of agricultural programs as delivered by FFA and 4-H. Minnesota FFA has a rich history and a bright future in preparing young people to be leaders for agriculture and in their local communities. There are over 35,000 students enrolled in agriculture, food, and natural resource classes in grades 7 through 12, of which nearly 11,000 have chosen to participate in the FFA. These programs are offered at more than 200 schools across our state, from both rural to urban schools. We have strong programs in the St. Paul School District, and we are especially excited that this year we are launching programs in the Minneapolis School District. FFA involvement is intercurricular and focused on helping students develop their leadership skills, career success, and personal growth. These students are developing skills that will prepare them for careers in the career pathways of agriculture business systems, animal systems, biotechnology, food products and processing, natural resource and environmental systems, plant systems, and power structure and technical systems. At the same time that Minnesota FFA is doing great things, Minnesota 4-H is doing their part in developing leaders for our communities. With programs in every county in Minnesota, more than 50,000 members are enrolled in agricultural products, which include, but are not limited to, the areas of livestock, veterinary science, agricultural ambassadors, and the Science of Agriculture program. So why a license plate? With the current economic challenge within the agricultural sector, we are working to secure funds for the important work of FFA and 4-H. A specialized license plate would give Minnesotans a voluntary way to show their support. This type of plate is already established in 15 other states and has really been useful in providing additional funds and generating pride. Minnesota auto owners are very receptive to paying additional fees to support causes they value. For calendar year 2019, there were over 665,000 special plates in circulation. So why invest in this type of program?
Ms. Arswald, I want to make sure we get Ms. Weirs in. Is that okay if we make sure, and then we can return to you if that's okay?
Yep, that's just fine. I was going to say, okay. I was going to lead you. The best way is to hear from our students. So by all means.
Yes, thank you so much for your flexibility, Ms. Arswald. Is Lainey Sweers on the call?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Ms. Sweers, if you want to proceed with your testimony, please state your name for the record. And we do have to need to stop in 4 minutes, but I hope that gives you enough time. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Lainey Sweers. So thank you, Chairman Horstein and committee members. My name is Lainey Sweers. I grew up on a small hobby farm in Bijou, Minnesota. I'm a recent graduate of Menomon High School, and I'm proud to be representing FFA and 4-H today. I'm currently serving as a Minnesota FFA State Sentinel and a Menomon County 4-H Ambassador and Federation Officer. Both organizations have shaped me into the person I am today, and I can confidently say that they have helped me choose my career path as an agricultural education teacher. From a young age, I knew that I wanted to be involved in agriculture. However, I did not know the many diverse and unique opportunities that agriculture provides. Without 4-H and FFA, I would not have developed the true passion I have for agriculture. For so many young people in Minnesota, FFA and 4-H have provided students with the knowledge and skills needed to be successful in their personal and professional lives. For me, these organizations have helped me gain an abundance of leadership skills and confidence as I prepare for my future career. Before ninth grade, I didn't enjoy school. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my future and had no plans of continuing my education. I didn't know where my purpose in life was, but in ninth grade, I was able to take my first agriculture class and join FFA. I instantly felt a place of belonging and looked forward to going to school. The summer after my freshman year of high school, I was able to attend a career and exploration camp held by Minnesota FFA. We traveled all around the state of Minnesota and visited different colleges and businesses in correlation to the agricultural industry. As part of the trip, we traveled to Crookston. It was here that I learned more about the University of Minnesota Crookston and fell in love with the campus and the people. The agricultural education professor talked to me about Ag Ed as a major and expressed how strong the program was. From there on out, I was determined to graduate and make my way to UMC so I could begin college. Fast forward to now, and I am in my second semester of college, and I'm loving every minute of it. Through 4-H, I gained a passion for agriculture. FFA helped me further develop my passion and laid a career to plan and join this noble field. These organizations are life-changing. And if I had more time today, I could tell you hundreds of stories from other Minnesota youth on how they are being positively impacted every single day because 4-H and FFA. In conclusion, your support of the Specialized Agricultural License Plate Bill would mean a lot to me and thousands of 4-H and FFA members across the state. It would provide opportunities for students so they are able to experience valuable programs like I did. Those programs include leadership and career conferences, camps, and other project work. Funds generated from the license plate bill will help ensure students can participate in regardless of their economic situation. FFA and 4-H have been life-changing to me. Today, you have heard a bit about my story, but I guarantee you that there are many, many more that would join me in sharing the value of 4-H and FFA. Thank you for your time today and the opportunity to share my story.
Thank you so much, Ms. Swears, for your very articulate and helpful testimony. We really appreciate your being here. Members, we do have, again, a hard stop here at 2:30 because of our limitations here with Zoom and House Research's or House Media Services requirements. So if it's okay, Ms. Arswold, is it okay if you can come back and complete your testimony at 5 p.m.?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I'm available at 5.
Okay, and Representative Hewitt as well? Okay, so members, we are going to recess this committee until 5 p.m., return on the same frequency. We will take up Representative Hewitt's bill first, then we'll do the DPS policy bill, and then we'll do our three bills related to small cities funding, road funding. So with that, members, this committee is in recess. We'll see you at 5 o'clock. Good afternoon and welcome back to the House Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. We are continuing our hearing and just have several more bills, and I appreciate everybody coming back to complete our agenda for today. So where we left off was a discussion on House File 1675, Representative Hewitt's bill, and that has to do with agricultural special license plates. And we adopted his A1 amendment, and Val Arswold was testifying, and Ms. Arswold, thank you so much for coming back and also yielding some of your time to our student who did such a wonderful job testifying. So I think we'd like to start with welcoming Ms. Arswold back to the committee. And Ms. Arswold, you can then complete your testimony. So welcome back to the committee, and maybe just restate your name for the record so everybody knows and remembers who you are.
Sure, thank you so much, Chairman Hornstein. Val Arswold, I appreciate the opportunity, and if you're okay, I'll proceed.
Yes, please proceed. Welcome back.
All right, thank you so much. I'm confident that after you all heard Lainey, you understand the appreciation that I have to being around young people. So with that, I'll just share a few more thoughts about why this license plate bill would be so significant to our organizations. Student enrollment in career and technical education classes, which agricultural education is part of, students graduate at a rate of 91%, which is nearly 10% higher than the statewide average. Youth involved in 4-H are more than four times as likely to contribute to their communities as other youth, and about two times as likely to be civically active. This bill has the support and endorsement of numerous organizations and businesses, and that was included on a handout that we made available. One notable, though, is Compure Financial Services has already committed to outfitting their fleet of nearly 150 vehicles with this plate. So we would have a significant jump start on some of the numbers that we know we can reach. We have also heard from numerous others that desire to purchase the plate when they become available. Some have asked about the design of the plate, and what we intend to do is to hold a contest and utilize the talent of FFA and 4-H members to submit designs for the plate that would inspire and really capture the beauty of agriculture here in Minnesota. As we consider how these funds would be used, our focus is to ensure that students, regardless of their economic status, have access to current and developing programs. An example of what FFA would use these funds for includes conferences like Intense, a career exploration program where students visit Minnesota colleges and universities, while at the same time visit our agricultural companies and businesses across the state. This is an intentional effort to help students not only see the opportunities available to them in agriculture, but to better understand the educational partners that we have across the state, helping them prepare for their future careers. I believe all Minnesotans want students to be successful in the classroom and active contributors to their communities. Minnesota FFA and 4-H have a proven record of doing just that. I thank you for your consideration of this bill and ask for your support as we'd like to celebrate and invest in our young people. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Arswold, and thank you for all of your work with youth. I concur with you. It is important. It is energizing. It is inspiring. And thank you for sharing that with us. We have a question or comment from Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this bill forward. It's an issue that we've been working on for quite some time. Hopefully this year it will get across the finish line. It's a worthy effort, and I hope it happens. I'd also like to thank Ms. Arswold for her work as advisor and supporter of this issue, but also for all her work with the youth of Minnesota. It's tremendous, and I think we should acknowledge that I would also like to thank her for her efforts to be elected to the Board of Regents, even though they weren't successful. Your name was mentioned many times last night, and not always pronounced correctly, but thank you for running. I know that you have a real heart for the youth of Minnesota and for the ag programs that you support so very excellently. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson, and well said. And again, appreciate all of your service and continued service to the youth and to the state. Ms. Arswell. So are there any other questions or comments on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Hewitt, you have any closing statement?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's always an honor to be in front of your committee, such great members of the House. And Representative Torkelson, your words went right to my heart there on the 4-H and on the FFA. I was a member. I wore a blue jacket back in the 80s. It was a little different organization back then, but it taught me a lot. One of the jokes in high school when we were in debate club was never debate a member of the FFA or the 4-H club. And so I think we can see some of our members here that have those traits even today. So members, let's get it across the finish line this time. And I appreciate your support with a yes vote in committee today.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And Representative Torkelson, your hand is up. I don't know if you wanted to say anything more. And he's muted. I'm assuming.
I have nothing more to say.
Okay. Okay. I want to always make sure that you have an opportunity if there's
there. A... My hand should.
There you go.
I put it back up again. Yeah. This is so difficult. It's so hard.
I know. Tell me about it. I totally understand, Representative Torkelson. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1675 is amended. Be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Mr. Dodge, please take the roll.
Chair Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Vice Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy?
Amends existing statute to allow the allocation under a new proposed
Representative
section.
Murphy?
Section 2 contains the new proposed section, which is 477.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Which is divided
into Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 16 ayes and zero nays, the motion prevails and the bill is on its way to the General Register, House File 964. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Thank you to the testifiers. And I would like to echo what Representative Torkelson said. I hope this is the year we can get this bill completed. Members, our next item, this is also was on our agenda for earlier today, and we moved it to the afternoon here, or later afternoon, so we could make sure all of the testifiers could get their testimony in for the earlier bill. So I'm going to hand the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Cagle, and we will hear House File 964.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to apologize in advance if you hear any screaming child or kids music in the background. So thank you, Chair Hornstein. Would you like to move your bill, House File 964, to the General Register?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 964 to the General Register. And members, this is a bill that we heard started hearing on March 2nd, or maybe we didn't. It was on the agenda March 2nd. So we didn't have time that day to hear it, and so it's back in front of us, and it is the 2021 version of the DPS policy bill. And what I'd like to do, members, is just, very quickly summarize what's in it. And of course, we have Ms. Corey and others to get into a little bit more detail. This is a bill that comes from, initiated by and comes to us from Department of Public Safety, and primarily deals with Driver and Vehicle Services Division of the DPS. There is the sections are as follows. There's a motor vehicle transfer fee. It adds a cross-reference to a required transfer fee that's specified in another section of statute. That's not just a new policy. It's just doing something similar to what we did last week with a cross-reference. Vehicle registration installment payments due date. It eliminates a confusing standard for vehicle registration payments for trucks, farm trucks, recreational vehicles, trailers, when they're paid in two installments. It specifies that they're due on July 1st and November 1st. We also have a clarification fee for deputy registrar notifications for vehicle sales going out of state. And it clarifies that the deputy registrars may charge a fee of $7 providing notification services to DPS for dealers who sell a vehicle. They'll be removed from the state. And then this replaces a current allowance of a fee up to $7. So it makes, again, this is again clarifying language. We're not changing policy here. And it makes the same clarification for acquisition of vehicles held by a dealer for resale. We have a driver's license photo variance for homebound individuals. Allows the homebound individuals a variance for renewal or issuance of a non-compliant state ID. And this is, again, we always have to say this now, members, this is not real ID compliant. It's just a non-compliant state ID. An individual requesting this variance must provide proof that their homebound status. And it allows the department to use a photograph of the individual that they have on file, as long as it was taken over the last 4 years. We have an update regarding mileage disclosure, provides the mileage disclosure requirements when transferring a motor vehicle so that they reflect the current federal standards rather than the ones from 1998, which are cited in current statute. So again, no change in policy, another update. So with that, members, Ms. Corey is here, and I think she's probably a little more thorough than I am, but I wanted to see if Ms. Corey wanted to add anything that I might have left out.
Mr. Chair, would you like to move the A1 amendment?
Oh, sure. Yes, there's an A1 amendment. Sorry about that. Members, this just simply echoes some language that was added in the Senate. And, you know, I would ask for some support here. And Ms. Corey can explain again the amendment.
Ms. Corey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Hornstein. That actually, Chair Hornstein, you covered it perfectly. I went through four of the five when we had to adjourn last time. So you really did cover all five items, but I can certainly stand for questions. Regarding the amendment, there on page four, line five, just basically when it comes to the variance for the photo, it broadens it under the medical saying, including physical or mental health. Also in terms of broadening the language to also include caseworkers being able to provide that documentation in addition to physicians. And then that third one is tied to the odometer reading and providing that odometer reading and adding the words electronic or written form. So it can be sent, the information can be transmitted to us electronically.
Thank you. And do you want to vote on the amendment? Representative Petersburg, I see your hand up. Would you mind if we voted on the amendment first and then got to questions?
Not a problem.
Okay. So the A1, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? All right, motion carries. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Chair. So looks like most of these pieces in here are fairly non-controversial. It is a little bit more unusual to see so many fee changes and increases in there. But I wanted just kind of, for that very reason, just talk a little bit about, could you tell us, or maybe Ms. Corey, as to who's going to retain the funds for these fees, et cetera, such as the dealer registration, will that go to the registrar itself, some of it's going up to the state, et cetera. I think it's just important for us to have that on record as to kind of clarity, at least as where it's going to go.
Ms. Corey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Petersburg, very important to clarify, this is not a new or added fee, Representative Petersburg. It's basically just clarifying. So as you know, we have a new system in place now, one system of record for driver and vehicle, and we have been looking at ways to clean up language. So the language basically says a dealer fee currently says a dealer fee not to exceed $7 or up to $7. What we're saying basically, the dealer fee is $7. So we don't have to set up the system to accept $4 or $5 or $6. Not that any DRs are, you know, have that much variation. Most of them do already charge $7. This is purely cleaning up the language, no new fees.
Representative
Petersburg. Madam Chair, yeah, thank you. I think that's helpful. I think those clarity issues are important. I do think the $10 fee for installments would go to the department to pay for the handling of it. And I think that's new from previously, is it not? On the installments?
No new fees in this particular policy bill. And I will clarify that, and my team is on the call, so we will clarify that before the end of this.
And you could be right. It's just my recollection. So thank you so much for that clarity, and that's all my questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Are there any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Chair Hornstein, would you like to renew your motion? Or any
thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, and thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Corey. As Representative Petersburg said, it's important. Most of the items are non-controversial, but it is important, and I appreciate Representative Petersburg. You're getting, you know, clarity on, you know, where these fees come and go. Oh, Representative Corey. She's Representative Corey today.
Ms. Corey.
Ms. Corey, yes, you can help out. Help me out with my final concluding comments.
Ms. Gordon.
I apologize, Madam Chair, Representative Chair Hornstein. I apologize for that. But I just did get a text and confirming that there are no new fees in this policy bill. So just confirming.
Ms. Corey, I'm so glad that you clarified that. I think it is important. That is, I think, something that members of this committee and the legislature do want to know. Anytime, you know, you have the $7 mentioned, the deputy registrar, I think people want to know if we're adding new fees and there may be other fees that are added in the bill later, but not this particular bill. So that's important to clarify on the record. So Madam Chair, I have no further comments and just would ask the committee's support. And I'll renew my motion that House File 964 as amended be re-referred to the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dodge, will you take the roll?
Chair Cagle?
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Barr?
Aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hausman?
Aye.
Hausman, aye. Representative Heinrich?
Aye.
Heinrich, aye. Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Mason?
Aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Murphy? Representative Murphy?
Model language in place when a fire.
Representative Nelson?
To eliminate.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Richardson, aye. Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Torkelson, aye. Representative West?
Aye.
West, aye. There are 16 ayes and 0 nays.
Thank you. With 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and you are on your way to the general register, Chair Hornstein. And with that, I will hand you back the virtual gavel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. We will now go back to our agenda that I think we had originally planned for beginning tonight at 5 p.m. And again, thanks, members, for hanging in there for those two bills that we just completed now that were on the agenda for earlier today. Members, just to give you a little bit of a preview here, we are going to be starting tonight and different times this week and most of next week, hearing bills or ideas, concepts that we'll be considering for inclusion in the finance bill. Of course, we've been hearing those all session, but now we're really getting into the nitty-gritty of specific issues and specific funding proposals for roads, bridges, public transportation, et cetera. So we're kind of entering a new phase of the session and really starting the work of putting together the finance bill. So as I mentioned, we're going to hear a lot of different ideas. They're not necessarily going to be included in the bill as we hear them, but the whole purpose of a hearing, such as the one we're having tonight, is to hear some ideas that members have brought to us on various subjects, and they have testifiers, and we can discuss them. And if there are issues that people want further discussion and review on as they relate to these bills, we'll. Tonight is a good chance to do it on the issue of funding roads and bridges in small cities and townships. And members, this has always been a vexing question for the legislature. We've had, a series of short-term fixes, but nothing really, I think, that has, solved this issue on a long-term basis with some, you know, specific dedicated funds. So we have a couple of ideas for that tonight. And, you know, the first one is House File 1620 from Representative Lippert. And then we'll be hearing a couple of bills from Representative Olson after that. So Representative Lippert, welcome to the Transportation Committee, and I appreciate your work on this issue. And I'm going to move that House File 1620 be laid over for possible inclusion in a transportation omnibus bill. And I understand you have an amendment as well, and welcome to the committee, Representative Lippert.
Thank you so much, Chair Hornstein. And yes, there is an author's amendment. This amendment divides up the revenue from the sales tax on rental cars in the following way. 67% goes to the town road account in the county state highway fund, and 33% goes to the town bridge account in the county state aid highway fund. So that's the content of the amendment.
Wonderful. I will move the A1 amendment. And again, members, this is simply to get the bill in the form that the author would like us to consider it, and we can certainly talk about it when we review the bill. Are there any questions or discussion? All those in favor signify, this is for the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All of those opposed, and the motion carries. So we now.
You're muted, Mr. Chair.
The motion prevails, and we now have House File 1620 before us, and proceed with your testimony, Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Currently, cities under 5,000 people in Minnesota aren't eligible for funds through the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And that means there are 705 cities that aren't eligible for these funds in Minnesota. Townships are only eligible for a small fraction of funds from this account. And this makes it extremely difficult for small cities and townships to maintain their roads and bridges. And as I talk with city officials and township leaders in my district, I hear this concern again and again. This bill, House File 1620, would allocate the 6.5% sales tax from rental vehicle sales to a fund for township roads and bridges, and the 9.2% excise tax to a small city's assistance account. The revenue from the sales tax was $17 million last year, and the revenue from the excise tax was $24 million last year. So this would provide a significant amount of revenue to townships and small cities to help them maintain this foundational infrastructure. With me to testify today is Capo Rourke and also Mr. Brian Heck, the city administrator for the city of Montgomery.
Okay, well, wonderful. Thank you very much. And members, again, we will hear the testimony and then have discussion. There are also some additional testifiers as well. But first we'll start with Mr. O'Rourke. Mr. O'Rourke, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We are a coalition of cities that have populations under 5,000. There are 705 cities with populations under 5,000, and we have a population total of over 660,000 people in the state. As Representative Lippert said, we currently have no designated funding for our roads. And this has been an ongoing issue. There previously had been an adjustment in the LGA factor, and that was removed a number of years ago. In its place, they created the Small Cities Street Assistance Fund, and it is a formula, but it has no ongoing dedicated revenue. As you'll see in the handouts, in the first year of this fund, we were allocated $12.5 million for the 2016-2017 biennium. In the 2018, we got $8 million. In 2019, we got $8 million. And in the current biennium, we had $0 appropriated. We have two bills up, and I will be speaking again on Representative Olson's bill. Representative Lippert's bill was pulled from the Minnesota Transportation Alliance package. This is a comprehensive transportation package, and we fully acknowledged that while these two pieces are pieces of that global package, that package was put together kind of as in a whole comprehensive manner, and pulling these out does not do justice to the full package. But nonetheless, our cities cannot wait for a global transportation package to come together. We are struggling to maintain and upkeep our roads, and we need some level of funding that is dedicated and ongoing to help our smallest cities. This fund, as Representative Lippert said, would pull the 9.2% excise tax, dedicate that to small cities. That would give us, in the first year of the next biennium, approximately $24 million. But as you spread that over all the cities, that it may sound like a fair amount. The reality is this would probably come to average someone in the neighborhood of $25,000 to $30,000 per city. And as was pointed out to me today by one of our members, you know, that is about the average cost to blacktop a one city block. So this is not going to be major dollars, but this is going to help significantly to our small communities. One of the biggest problems we have as for not having dedicated funding is we're not able to budget for some of these projects. And when the state does grant money, their cities end up having to look at short-term projects, and they end up costing us more, and we're not able to set aside money for long-term projects because we're not sure when those next dollars. So I will step aside and let Brian Heck is one of our newly elected board members, and he is the city administrator down in Montgomery, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Heck, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Brian Heck. I am the city administrator for the city of Montgomery. I've been city administrator in Montgomery here for just over 7 years. And to echo what Mr. O'Rourke said and Representative Lippert, in my 7 years here in Montgomery, in all of our resident surveys that we started doing in 2016, the number one priority that the residents put forth is maintenance and construction of our city streets. We have about 22 miles of city street. About 50% of them are in pretty much unpassable condition. We can't seal coat them anymore. We can't do a reclamation project on them. We can't do a mill and overlay. They require a complete reconstruction. They have hit the end of life. And this last snowfall, every time they plow snow and snow like this in the spring or the fall, we peel up asphalt along with the snow. Patching it doesn't work. We do have a 10-year road reconstruction plan. And the road portion, we're starting that project, our plan this year, first big project. The road reconstruction project of that is $2.9 million just to do the asphalt, the curb, the gutter, and that kind of thing. The total project is going to cost the city close to $5 million. We get there's no city aid for that. That's all borne by the small population group we have down here. To maintain our roads, we have to seal coat them every 5 to 7 years to make sure that they stay in reasonable shape. And a seal coat for two of our neighborhoods costs us $56,000 to do that. We're going to do that this year. Last year, we spent close to $70,000 doing a couple of roads. Again, that comes right out of the general fund, comes right out of the property tax. We have no assistance coming to us. So any amount that we can get, that would cut that. If we got $24,000 like we did when an allocation was, I think, like $10 million, we got $24,000 in street aid. That covers half of the cost of a seal coat for one of our neighborhoods. And that doesn't seem like a lot, but it does help tremendously. So any kind of aid we can get to help offset the cost of these extremely expensive projects will satisfy us, and it also will help our residents greatly. I've spoken to this committee a couple of times on this, and the costs do not go down, they keep going up. So thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And if there's questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you so much, Mr. Heck. And I know that there were a couple of additional people beyond the ones that Representative Lippert identified. Representative Hausman, do you have a question for either Mr. O'Rourke or Mr. Heck?
No, mine is to the bill. I can wait until all the testimony is over.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hausman. So next on my list is Steve Fenske. He's the general counsel of the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I welcome Mr. Fenske back to the committee. I think he testified earlier this session. Welcome, Mr. Fenske, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, very well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. Thank you for hearing the bill, and thank you to Representative Lippert, not only for the bill, but also the amendment. Representative Hornstein, you really hit the nail right on the head when you, with your preamble, that this is a problem that comes up each year. We're back here each year, and it maybe gets a Band-Aid, but this bill would really satisfy the need for townships in a long time. As was mentioned, costs go up, but this is about $19 million to townships, and this is for maintenance. So it's not to rebuild anything. This is just for that maintenance that they need, and we estimate townships are short about $20 million a year. So this bill would go a long way for townships, and keep in mind that townships often are maintaining gravel roads. You can go a long way with $20 million for gravel roads. So we thank the committee for that, and I will leave it there for this evening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fenske, and thanks for your advocacy this year. I've enjoyed our meetings. Our last testifier on this bill is Ms. Margaret Donahoe, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And Ms. Donahoe, welcome to the committee, and nice to see you again, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Margaret Donahoe. I am the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. So as you've heard, we definitely recognize that this is a perennial problem, and we absolutely support providing revenue for townships and small cities. That's why we came up with the idea of redirecting the sales tax on rental vehicles as part of a larger transportation funding package. We think it's very important to have this as part of a longer term funding package, because otherwise the revenue that's already in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund simply gets shortchanged, and we're basically robbing Peter to pay Paul. Just to give you an idea, what we had talked about, and we brought stakeholders together to talk about this, is increasing money into the Highway Trust Fund and also increasing funding for transit statewide by adjusting the debt service surcharge, which is currently 3.5 cents a gallon, adjusting the depreciation schedule that's used to calculate license tab fees, raising the motor vehicle sales tax rate to be the same as the general sales tax rate of 6.875%, increasing the metropolitan area sales tax by a quarter cent for transits, changing the current statutory dedication of the sales tax on auto repair parts from a flat annual amount to at least 60% of the total revenue raised, increasing the electric vehicle fee, redirecting the sales tax on rental vehicles so that the 9.2% sales tax would be shared between the Small Cities Assistance Fund and Greater Minnesota Transit, and the 6.5% tax would be directed to townships, changing the distribution of the motor vehicle lease sales tax to include all 7 metropolitan area counties, and authorizing additional trunk highway bonds for the Corridors of Commerce program. So that was basically the package. And we did think this was a really good way to provide a dedicated ongoing revenue stream, a specific revenue stream for small cities and townships that would grow in the future. But we do have concerns about doing this in isolation. As you know, this revenue is currently going to the constitutionally dedicated uses, the Trunk Highway Fund, the County State Aid Fund, and the Municipal State Aid Street Fund. So doing this without additional revenue into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund would mean a loss of revenue to the Trunk Highway Fund of over $44 million for the next biennium and over $53 million for the following biennium, a loss to the County State Aid Fund of over $20 million for the next biennium and $25 million in the following biennium, and a loss to the Municipal State Aid Street Fund of about $6.5 million in the next biennium and $7.7 million in the following biennium. So, you know, local governments are already dealing with less state aid this year because of the pandemic, because of the loss of revenue in the gas tax. 2021 allocations to cities and counties were down about 9% compared to 2020 allocations. So local governments are already struggling. This does not solve the problem. So we would really urge the committee to either provide additional general fund dollars through either a direct appropriation or changing the dedication of the sales tax on auto parts to a percentage so it grows, or increasing the dedicated fees that we have that are deposited into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund so that this redirection of these revenue sources to small cities and townships would work. So we just don't want to see taking away from one part of the transportation system in order to fund another part of the transportation system when the whole system is underfunded. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dono, for those very insightful comments. And I've appreciated your perspective on this issue. And I completely agree with you that it's important that this be thought of as a larger context. So I appreciate your comments. And now we can get to member questions. So I don't have anyone else on the list. Is there anyone that I might have left out that's here who wants to testify on the bill? Who's on the call? If not, we'll go to member questions. First, we have Representative Hausman and then Representative Petersburg after that. Representative Hausman. Chair Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have misunderstood, but is this car rental tax going only to Greater Minnesota?
Either Representative Lippert or maybe Mr. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with this bill and with this amendment, it would be reallocated to go to cities under 5,000 and townships for maintenance of roads and bridges.
Anywhere.
Yep. Madam. Yep.
Mr. O'Rourke.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, yeah, this would go to any cities under 5,000. We have member cities throughout every congressional district. So this is not limited to Greater Minnesota. We have cities under 5,000 right in the metro area as well.
Representative Hausman, Chair Hausman.
I was thinking about it in the context of the previous testifier, because we usually don't ask those kinds of questions when we have a package, because we assume every part of the package sort of balances so that all of the needs are met. And so this one, I just needed to understand the equity in the where those dollars go. I may have been thrown off. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
No, go ahead.
I may have been thrown off by the fact that the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities was the supporter of the bill.
I'm sorry, what was or was not supportive, did you say?
They are supportive of it, Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Okay, good. Okay, well, thank you, Chair Hausman. Next on the list is Representative Petersburg, followed by Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. One of them is a technical question that I was hoping that maybe Mr. Burris might help me with. On page 2, on line 216 through 22, first, let's go back to, there was a change in dates for this new position on the bill on 2.7, in which it talks about after 2021, this new tax would be redistributed. But then in 216 through 2.22, it says that after July 17, this money, in conjunction with that paragraph, would go into the HUTD. It just seems like those two might be contradictory to each other. And I was wondering if Mr. Burris had a chance to look at that and whether or not I'm just misreading it.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg. So sort of two ways of coming at it, but I think maybe the clearer way is from the standpoint of the A1 amendment, which also modified the date on line 2.16 to be 2021. Right. So for both the revenue tax streams, starting with January 1st, 2021 or fiscal year 2022, the new allocation would be in place. Even absent the amendment, I don't think that there actually would have been an issue because the statutory language as it stands just articulates the starting time. It doesn't matter if, you know, something new, some piece of new allocation for one of the streams changes at a different date.
Representative Petersburg. Thank you, Mr. Burris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Burris. You, as always, are always the one that I go to for final decisions here. So the issue that I have is not with that we should need more funding for small cities and town roads and bridges. That is, as you said, Mr. Chair, an absolute must, and we must figure out how to do that. My big concern is the fact that we are taking the money directly out of HUTD, which has no other sources to replenish that fund. And so those dollars are just going to be gone until we find some other avenue to replace that with. And so I'm concerned about that. And it's not like we have the ability to go out there and tax or whatever additionally for that. Right now, we're constitutionally dedicated at this rate. We would have to change that, which at this point, as you know, is very difficult to do. And it's even more difficult to get general fund dollars in to help with HUTD and constitutionally dedicated programs. You know, townships and cities and others, they do have the ability to tax through property tax as well. It's not the best. I don't want you to have to do that, but it is an option that the Department of Transportation doesn't have. Department of Transportation has to stay within the budget of the dollars that it gets, primarily through constitutionally dedicated funding. And so we need to figure out how we provide this, and I'm all for it. So I'm not against giving more money to Road and Bridge Fund as well as small cities. I think it's an absolute must if we're actually going to help them with their structure. But the road and bridge system throughout the state, whether it's counties or townships, or even the state, are all suffering from the same thing. We need to find a way in order to maintain them and grow. So whereas I think this is a good step and something to consider, for me, it would not be my first choice. So I know we're just laying this over, so we're not gonna vote on it, but I think we have some other ideas and options out there, and I'd be interested in looking at them as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And again, I appreciate your comments because, you know, that's why we have a hearing. And I hope that having this hearing now, still, you know, a few weeks before we unveil, a couple weeks at least before we unveil the bill, or, well, I guess that 3 weeks before we unveil the bill, you know, gives us some time to work on this. So that's why we're doing this. And I wanted to have this particular hearing a little earlier in the process, because I do think, number one, I think, as you mentioned, Representative Petersburg, there is widespread agreement we need to do this. I still think there is a number of ways we can do it that should be discussed. And so I think your comments, those of Ms. Donahoe, are well taken. Chair Mason.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. I guess my comments are similar to the previous ones. I mean, we're trying to divide up money, unless there's surpluses there that I don't know about, to just divide it even more. That to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense, unless we're not bringing in new money. all we're doing is making things even more difficult. So I guess I have some discomfort with the way this particular bill is. It's, and I know the money. I know they need the money. I know that.
Yeah.
That's not the question. So.
Good point, Representative Mason. Okay, I don't see any other comments from committee members. I'm wondering if the author or any of the advocates would want to respond to anything that members have said. Representative Mesa, did you have an addendum to your comments, or I see your hand up again?
Did not get my hand down in time. Sorry about that.
Okay, that's okay. That's, you know, again, just making sure everyone has said their piece. Oh, Representative Koznick, would love to hear from you on this. Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Look, my video's working.
you're coming through loud and clear, and your hand is up, and we can see you. So all the boxes are checked.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your approach to this, is taking a look at the obvious a need across the state. Different districts are much different than some of the districts, like the ones I represent or those around the metro. I understand, the variety of options, let's say, to be polite, of Ms. Donahue's list of revenue increases. I'm wondering, for the Mr. O'Rourke or the author or somebody else, what is your position or solution to offset the taking of dollars from other districts in this bill to your small cities? What are your overall plans to do that, or do you think this is just a be-all, end-all, contrary to the way the chair laid out this proposal? Because, we'll be polite, but, it is a little offensive in the way the bill is laid out currently to districts whose street money you're actually taking away from. So are there other revenues, or what other solutions do you have, Mr. O'Rourke?
Mr. O'Rourke.
Yep. Mr. Chair and Representative Koznick, the reality is we have three options when it comes to funding, sustained ongoing funding. We can either take money from an existing transportation account, we can take money from the general fund, or we can raise revenue. None of those options has broad support across the board at the Capitol. And the reality is we are rather agnostic as to the type of revenue that comes in. We like the car rental tax, as it is a single dedicated tax that will direct towards our members and our projects. And while we understand that some of the bigger cities and communities and counties would take a slight hit to their accounts, we're currently getting no funding. So our 660 residents that drive their city streets aren't getting any dollars. Our cities are having to do this all by themselves. And our communities, frankly, have a lot fewer levers that they can access to fund city projects, including roads. We are willing to work with any chairs. There are other options that people have put forth, and we're not requiring that this be the funding source, but we do need a funding source, and we would like it to be sustainable and ongoing, rather than having to come back to the legislature every 2 years and try to get whatever's left over in the general fund. That's shown to be a non-reliable source of money for our members, even when we've had budget surpluses.
Mr. Chair, I would...
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With respect, Mr. O'Rourke, you laid out very, very articulately three ways to get revenue, saying you're agnostic, but you know, the bill that's in front of us and what and your testimony they just had is you are actually, in fact, most comfortable with taking money from other people. And so I can appreciate having this discussion. I'm not denying that there certainly is a desire for more revenue in small cities, Mr. O'Rourke, but you're willing to take money from other constituents, which is not really a solution in my suggestion. I guess I was looking for your third option of revenue raisers. Are you willing to raise revenue among your constituents to pay for these roads instead of taking valuable road dollars that are already underfunded from other constituents? And what revenues suggestions do you have then?
Mr. O'Rourke. Chair and Representative Kosnick, I would say, if you're not thrilled about this, I would tell you to be patient and wait for Representative Olson's bill. But I would push back and say our constituents are raising revenue. Our constituents pay the gas tax just like everybody else. Our constituents are paying into all the transportation funds that every other constituents are. Our cities just aren't getting any of the dollars. So now if you're suggesting that the small cities have to raise their gas taxes or raise their revenues, we are communities that are already functioning at about our limit as far as revenue capabilities. So it becomes really difficult to figure out what levers our communities can pull that exclude all the other cities and counties around the state. But we did sign on to the Transportation Alliance package, which is a comprehensive transportation plan and has a number of revenue raisers. And we do acknowledge that there is a need for a greater transportation package. But this program in particular, we always seem to have a lot of fans on both committees in both bodies. And I've often likened it to we're the cherry on top of the sundae, that when we all get the sundae put together, we'll be one of the things that's in it. But we're the last thing in, and we haven't had comprehensive transportation reform and funding, and so we don't get funded. And this has been ongoing for a number of years.
And I believe Mr. Heck had his hand up. I don't know if he still would like to respond to anything that Representative Kosnick said.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. To Mr. Kosnick, I'd just like to restate what Mr. O'Rourke had said, and I was going to mention this. All my residents in Montgomery, well, they used to commute, a lot of them commute into the cities for jobs. They all buy gas, which is the major funder for the local street fund, the municipal street aid. And we're not privy to getting that municipal street aid. The people who put the Constitution together said, well, what's a good number for state aid going to cities? Well, let's make it 5,000. So if I'm at 499, or $4,999, I don't get any street aid. I have one more person move in, and magically, my city is eligible for municipal state aid. The only way that Montgomery can finance its street reconstruction and improvement projects is through the tax levy. And just probably 6-7 years ago, the Montgomery's tax rate was over 119%. A lot of that was due to new roads and developments. We have it now down to about 68% as a tax rate. But I have $30 million worth of street improvement projects to get done. And all of that $30 million is going to land on the laps of the 3,200 people living in the city of Montgomery through the property tax and through special assessments. When we do the water and sewer, as a part of that to upgrade the water and sewer lines, that then falls on to their water and wastewater rates as well. And as Mr. O'Rourke said, any way that we can get additional dollars to help offset that enormous amount of money that we have to invest in our roads would be beneficial. Obviously, you have a pie that's only so big. Someone's going to gain a little bit. Someone's going to lose a little bit. But as Mr. O'Rourke said, small cities haven't had any money since forever. I used to work in the city of Lauderdale back in the early 2000s, and I remember talking about how can the cities under 5,000, even the metro area, get something to help maintain our streets, because we're not getting anything, and our streets go 50 years without having treatments, and it shows, and our residents should get something from the gas taxes they pay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Heck. And again, appreciate this very rich discussion. You know, I think in many ways it mirrors, you know, the broader dilemmas and, issues that we have to contemplate here, you know, every time we put together an omnibus bill. So, but I appreciate Mr. O'Rourke, Mr. Heck, all, and Representative Lippert, your efforts here. And, you know, I think you've given us a lot to think about here over these next couple of weeks. And we want to remain in contact with you. And of course, Ms. Donahoe and others as we, you know, make another effort to address this very vexing issue that, you know, as all of you have pointed out, has been with us, you know, as long as I have been on the Transportation Finance Committee and maybe even before that. So, Representative Lippert, did you want to close with any thoughts or comments? Again, we're laying this bill over, and I'll certainly be talking with you as we move forward and, you know, trying to get some solutions to this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just close with a short anecdote. So I live in the city of Northfield. It's a city of 20,000 people. The road in front of our house was in need of serious repair. And so this last summer, it was resurfaced. And just after it was resurfaced, a council member from Montgomery was traveling through to Lake Pepin. He stopped by my house because he had something to talk with me about. And the first thing he said to me was, "That's a really nice road." And it's hard for us to do that in Montgomery. So I think we heard clearly the need, and this bill is one idea. And I really appreciate the discussion. We need to be addressing this need for communities of 5,000 under and people in townships all across the state. So thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, members, thank you again for that very helpful discussion. Again, this is going to be something that we, along with many other issues here over the next few weeks, will be addressing and hopefully finding some creative solutions to. So with that, members, I will renew my motion to have House File 1620 laid over for possible, as amended, laid over for possible inclusion in the transportation omnibus bill. Thank you so much, Representative Lippert, again, for coming, for sticking around here in the evening and for your work on this issue. So members, we have a couple more bills to close us out for the day. House File 1147 is next on the agenda, and I very much appreciate Representative Olson bringing this to us. This is his first bill in front of the Transportation Committee, and Representative Olson, have really appreciated your contributions to the committee so far, and you come to this issue also with a very personal perspective as the former mayor of Elmore, and so I am glad that you brought these bills before us, and I will move also to lay House File 1147 over for possible inclusion in the transportation omnibus. And I know that you have an oral amendment to your bill, and let's incorporate that first, and then we can get to your bill and your testifiers. So with that, Representative Olson, I don't need to welcome you to the committee. You're on the committee, but please proceed with a discussion of your amendment. A1, coded A1.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in fact, this is actually the first hearing of any bill that I've ever received as a legislator, so I appreciate that, and that'll go down in history as something that'll be remembered very fondly for me. This amendment that we're talking about, it just is with numbers. Essentially, it goes from $8 million to $15 million, and the reason for that kind of derived from a conversation that I had with my Senator Julie Rosen, who said that the Senate is looking at making some considerable expenses of infrastructure investments. So we kind of took that as a, well, we looked at the budget, we looked at what the Senate's hoping to accomplish, and thought that that would be an appropriate adjustment to make if you will entertain that, Mr. Chair, seeing as it didn't make the 24-hour rule.
Well, yes, and Representative Olson, just for members, on something like this, we're waiving the 24-hour rule so that Representative Olson can get this bill in the condition he would like it. We're not voting on it out of committee. It's being laid over. So we made a decision together to allow for this amendment. So members, is there a discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. And we have House File 1147 as amended before us. Representative Olson, to your bill. Representative Kosnick, did you want to weigh in here? Maybe we, was I too quick with the vote?
It's okay. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, maybe it is in the author's intent to explain the amendment or have House Research explain it with the bill explanation.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Olson, yes, to the bill as amended, now is an opportunity to talk further about that. And I mean, you did mention the amendment and lining up with some conversations in the Senate and going up from 8 to 15. But if you want to elaborate on that, that's fine. And the bill as a whole, this is your opportunity to make that presentation. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill, actually, it's as much as I would like to claim that it was my own original idea, this actual bill was passed back in, they did it in 2016, they did it again in 2018, and then again in 2019, where these funds were allocated. So this is nothing new. We all obviously, through the discussion that we've had, we realize that there's issues with funding small cities and their roads. Now, granted, they did build those roads on their own, and so there is a little level of expectation that a city should be able to if they can build it on their own, then they can maintain it on their own. But as a person who has dealt with this personally, actually, I was the mayor in 2016 I was elected in 2016. So we received that state money to assist in our roads in Elmore back when it was funded originally. Then we received it again in 18 and again in 19. And I can tell you that we stretched that money a long ways. So whereas the bill's only going to allow for between $20,000 and $30,000 per small city, we can take that money, we can stretch it a really long ways. So when we're talking about putting Band-Aids on roads, $30,000 buys a lot of Band-Aids in a small town like Elmore, which has somewhere around 50 small blocks in the city. So we do a really great job of allocating those funds along with some street assessment fees that our constituents are paying for as well. So no matter what, wherever we're at in this game, people are going to be trying to take money from other people. And what I really hope to do and accomplish with this bill is just provide a Band-Aid while we try and figure out the larger issue of how can we maintain all of our roads in the state of Minnesota. Knowing that we don't have any target projections, I liked the idea that the amendment was a little bit larger, because when you can always take something away, it's harder to gain something. So that was my hope with the amendment. If we in fact need to take something away from it, I understand cities can stretch it a long ways, and we have done it a long ways. So I won't really filibuster my own bill here, as I know that we have time that we need to move. So I'll just give it over to the testifier, Cap O'Rourke, and he can, we're not going to show you 100 pictures of potholes, because you all have seen those before.
Thank you very much, Representative Olson, for that explanation, and we'll hear again from Mr. O'Rourke.
Well,
welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Cap O'Rourke with Minnesota Small Cities. I kind of feel like, for those of you who had concerns about the last bill, have I got a brand new deal for you this time? But I mean, it's a different approach, and we support it. And as I told Representative Kosnick, we are willing to work with kind of all sorts of funding ways. And and we just are looking for a little bit of assistance for our street. So there's some level of parity amongst local units of government. And I want to thank not only Representative Olson and Representative Liffert, but I also want to thank Chairman Hornstein and Representative Torkelson, who have been longtime big backers of these efforts and this funding formula and getting help to the small cities. You know, having it come from the general fund as Representative Olson is proposing, obviously we know it makes it more liable to when we have economic downturns and deficits, it can make it more challenging to fund, and the consistency, which is something that a lot of our members are looking for, becomes more challenging. But in the end, we really need investment from the state, some support from the state to help our small cities deal with these improvements. So I will open up to any more questions, but I wanna again thank Representatives Lippert and Olson and Hornstein and Torkelson for their longtime support of this issue.
Thank you, Mr. O'Rourke. I see a question from Representative Torkelson or a comment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make this very brief. I just thank Representative Olson for bringing this forward and acknowledging that we have done some work for small cities in the past. It's been inconsistent. We've tried to, you know, get it into a permanent spot, and nothing is permanent in the legislature, but this need is permanent. These small cities need and deserve some transportation funding, as has been reiterated many times. They pay their share of gas tax, and a little money for small cities goes a long way, but it should be there in every transportation bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And very well said, Representative Torkelson. So members, is there any further discussion? I don't think we have any other people have signed up ahead of time to testify. I don't know if there's anyone on the call that would like to testify either for or against this bill, but I don't see any other member questions or comments. So Representative Olson, I know you have another bill coming up, but did you have any final thoughts on House File 11? 47 as amended.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Chair. This is just one of those situations we have to do something, and that's what has been this conversation for the last 25 minutes with my bill and Representative Lippert's bill. It's just we got to find a solution. This provides, in my opinion, quite a few band-aids to last a little bit while we try and find a 100% solution to the issue. So I appreciate this bill being heard. And so I believe it's my turn now to renew my motion, or is that yours, Mr. Chair?
You know what? This is your first bill. You can renew your motion.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. So with that being said, I will renew my motion that House File 1147 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus Bill.
Thank you. Well done.
Hey, thank
and,
you.
And I, you know what? That was so good. I'm going to have you move House File 11. And so with that, the bill is laid over. I will have you move 1148, your next bill, members on the agenda, which is House File 1148. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move House File 1148 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus Bill.
Wonderful. And I believe you also have an amendment on this as well.
That is correct. So the amendment that we brought forward with this bill came from a conversation with my county engineer, who took a look at all basically, it's the bridge fund for the townships. He looked at it and he said, pretty much every county is doing okay. And that's really where we want to be. There's no reason why anyone in particular should be flush with cash in the transportation department, because everyone's looking for a little bit of something and everyone needs something. So what we're trying to do with this is we're trying to take the money that would previously be allocated to the township bridges and just allocating that funding to the townships for the use of their roads. I was talking with one of the individuals on our township board, and he said, you know, when I started, gravel was $6 a ton. Now it's over $20 a ton. So the need is definitely there. And that's basically what the amendment does. It transfers the allocation of that extra money that we had put aside. It was a total package of $4 million to be divvied between the township for their roads and for their bridges, but we're just combining it and saying this is for your roads, not your bridges instead.
Okay. That's very helpful. Is there discussion to the A21 amendments? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying
aye. Mr. Chair?
Oh, I believe Representative
Cagle had a question.
A late question from Representative Cagle. Go ahead, Vice Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And Representative Olson, so it'd be combining them into one account. Could they still use it for bridges if they wanted to?
You know, the Olson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, look at that. I'm still learning my job here.
Yeah, you're doing great.
From my understanding, it would just be for the use of their roads. The Township Bridge Fund was what was previously in the line item of the bill that has been struck with this amendment.
Representative Cagle, do you have a follow-up? Okay. All right, well, we have an amendment that's been moved, or at least I'll move it officially. The A21 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. And so now we have House File 1148 as amended before us. Representative Olson, I think you gave a good explanation. If you don't have anything further to add, I know you have a testifier, Mr. Fenske. Again.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I'll direct your attention to Mr. Fenske, where he will show you hours long of pictures of poorly maintained roads and townships.
Those are helpful to have. Mr. Fenske, welcome back to the committee. And please restate your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Fenske. I'm counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships, and I'll spare you any pictures of washed out roads. Thank you, Representative Olson, for this bill. This again does pick up on something that has been done in the past as what we hope is a short-term solution to put a cash infusion into the town road account. That's something, as Representative Torkelson mentioned, has been done in years past. This is one of those methods you can use to try and fund town roads. I guess the downside is we come back and ask you for something every year, hoping there's something left. But this amount would go, again, directly into maintenance. And to Representative Cagle's question, I think we probably could use this money for bridges if a township wanted to. There's a few ways to do that. I'll spare you the details, but I believe we could if a town wanted to. This would be spread out across townships right away. There wouldn't be a system where they have to try and apply as some programs do. Again, that's another advantage to this. Speaking to any of these methods, what I didn't mention before and maybe should have to set the stage here, townships are already 75% property tax dependent. So there's not a lot of room to go up. In townships, the voters set the property tax themselves. So it's not a city council or a town board that can just order the amount to go up. The people have to decide to do it. Sometimes they do that a great deal. But there's also few opportunities for new revenue. There's no sales tax. There's nothing like that. So there are really not a lot of options for them. Likewise with bonding, some entities will rely on bonding for projects. Towns do not have that same advantage. And it's because most of their infrastructure doesn't meet the qualification for bonding money. So money like this that Representative Olson is offering and Representative Lippert offered, that's where townships are going to be taken care of and where I hope this is acceptable to the committee. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fenske. Members, at this point, I just want to see if there's any questions from the committee for either Representative Olson or Mr. Fenske. I know that we already had one from Representative Cagle. Okay, I'm scanning the participant list. I don't see any further questions. Representative Olson, did you want to summarize here? And then we'll move on from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think that just about everyone in this committee, except for myself and Representative Frederick, have seen this type of bill before. So I don't really need to spend too much time explaining it. We definitely have to figure out something, what we're going to do with the small cities and the townships. And so this is one option. And so I appreciate the fact that we've looked into it and that it is being held over. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Great job, and on a very important issue. And also, I say between you and Representative Lippert, I think you've given us a lot of helpful ideas, and it's going to be our task here over the next 2-3 weeks to, again, I think there's a challenge, right? You've laid out a challenge for us, and you know, we want to find, you know, maybe this is a year we can have that dedicated fund. If not, there's a plan B, I think, that you've also laid out. So, you know, really important to have these options and tools in our toolbox here. So thank you, and great job, Representative Wilson. Thank you so much. And I think you bring personally some important experience. I think your story about what Elmore was able to do with state funding is helpful, hopeful, and instructive for us. So appreciate that. So members, our next meeting is going to be on Thursday, March 18th at our usual time. And then we've also set aside time again in the afternoon to make sure we can get through the agenda. And just so you know, we have a temporary placeholder for Friday. I'm hoping we don't have to do that. It's available to us. And Mr. Howe and I are going to be discussing, you know, how we can make the most of our time on Thursday. So again,
Mr. Chair? Bills?
Yes, Representative Petersburg.
I don't think you officially laid over the bill yet.
Oh, you know what? That is very helpful. I always have to say that there's that phrase, with that. So with that, House File 1148 as amended is laid over. For possible inclusion. So thank you again, Representative Wilson. Now, just to conclude my thought here on where we're headed, we're hoping again to get the bills that need to be processed done on Thursday, but we do have an option for Friday as well. And then we'll hear a lot of bills next week. So members, with that, we're done 10 minutes early, and our meeting is adjourned.